grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Illinois CASA and Champaign County CASA, who recruits, trains, and monitors volunteer advocates for abused and neglected children. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Today, listeners, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Susan joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. You can join us with a telephone call if you'd like to talk with Susan. Give us a call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's also a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her on the web at www.eatandmove.com. Questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise are invited this afternoon. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Happy March. Good to see you.
Happy March. Good to see you.
March is National Nutrition Month, sponsored by the American Dietetic Association. What's the ADA's objective for National Nutrition Month this year?
Well, the ADA is talking a lot about stepping up to nutrition and health. And I think within the theme of our national guidelines that have come out this year about how important it is to balance nutrition with exercise, I think that's really one of the key things that they're talking about and the dietitians are talking about. And part of that is thinking about how your nutrition and what you eat really combines with your activity and how that helps you meet your goals. I think, you know, through the years, we've done a lot of talking about maybe nutrition in one corner and then exercise in the other corner. And I think it's just so important for people to take a full look. I think March being Nutrition Month is actually really good timing because we've kind of gone through all the holidays. Everybody's back, you know, had some time to get back to their normal routine. Spring is coming. So certainly in this part of the country, it's really a good time to think about your goals, probably more so than January, in terms of where you want to be body-wise and health and fitness-wise. And so, you know, really it's just starting to assess what you are eating and what kind of activity you are getting in a day. And even just starting to track that is one of the things the ADA recommends as a way to just say, hey, where am I right now in terms of, you know, where can I set my goals and what can I look at doing, and making sure that I'm really getting the information that's going to be helpful to me.
Okay. When you advise folks about taking stock where they are, how long do you advise folks to keep a diary, a journal of minutes of activity and what they're eating?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, first of all, I think it's real important to do that probably at least for a month. I mean, that might be kind of a minimum level because we eat differently depending upon what day of the week it is often. I mean, sometimes if we just track 3 or 4 days, we're really not going to get a sense of what we do on the weekend. Days might be different depending upon our schedule and our work environment and those kinds of things. But I think to get a real good assessment of what you are doing, it's helpful to go with at least 3 or 4 weeks. And I have a lot of clients I work with who track every day. They continue to track because they feel like that's really helpful to keep them not overeating in particular, but also being aware if they're getting everything in. in terms of their servings. You know, all of our listeners can go on their own, could go on the My Pyramid website and really look at the Food Guide Pyramid and track their serving recommendations and for their own body and their own body type and weight and things like that. But I think the most important thing, one thing everybody could start doing is just definitely tracking the minutes that they're active. And that certainly does include things like going up and down stairs, walking from your car to the grocery store. I mean, all those things. I think it's helpful to track that and even start tracking how many fruits and vegetables you ate in the day. That's a good thing to start. So maybe you're monitoring your fruit and vegetable servings, mm-hmm. you're monitoring your activity, because those we know are two things that both affect health. If I had to pick two things to do that would affect overall health status as much or more than anything, it would be that. It would be certainly eating more foods that are really high in nutrients, not that high in calories, but provide a lot of fiber and key things that are helpful, mainly fruits and vegetables, and then also just being aware of your activity. A lot of people I work with think that they're pretty active, but when they really sit down and look at it, even if they exercise in the morning for 20 or 30 minutes, that might be the only activity they get in a day. And we do know mm-hmm. that, you know, kind of our national guidelines, at least 60 minutes, and most of us would do well to get more than that, but it doesn't have to be all at one time. You know, I think if you're looking to really lose weight or manage cholesterol or manage a disease state, you do want to work with a certified exercise physiologist, personal trainer to develop a specific plan for your exercise. And I think those are the people who really benefit the most from also working with a registered dietitian for nutrition plans. So you really can figure out what does my body really require and how am I going to be consistent with this? Get a plan, start tracking your plan, and being able to stick with it.
How long does it take, generally, take an individual to see trouble spots and or places to make better choices?
Well, again, I think even if you look for a week or two at what you are eating, that's helpful. That will give us some feedback, particularly on portion size. Because one of the things we know, there was a new report that just came out yesterday, I believe, about another real concern about obesity, not mm-hmm. only in this country, but worldwide obesity with kids, and how childhood obesity is just increasing so much now. And some of that is really related to portion size. There's no question about it that our kids are eating more than they really need, partly because we're eating more than we really need. And so even starting to write down after a couple days, we get a sense maybe of the amounts. I think the other thing that's so helpful is to really look at not only writing everything down, but have a sense of the amount that you are eating. If you're preparing a meal and you're trying to balance everything out, you know, what does a cup look like mm-hmm. on your plate? And what does a half cup look like? We've talked before about the idea that I have a lot of my clients take their plate and divide it into quarters, and that's a good place to start. Just one quarter rice or pasta or potato or bread or grain, one quarter fruit, one quarter vegetable, one quarter protein. And just by doing that, most people will cut down their calories because they start eating a little bit more fruits and vegetables and cut down maybe on the main item that might be higher calorie. And just by doing that and taking a look at the plate and reassessing that, that's a good start, because we know that anytime we're mindful of what we eat, anytime we just pay more attention to what we eat, most of us tend to eat better just because of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the recommendation is, or this is stuck in my mind thanks to a public campaign, five mm-hmm. a day.
Right.
But five servings of fruit and vegetables is not very much. So
right.
Can I have more than five?
More than five would be great.
Okay.
Ideally, and some of the data we have from the American Institute for Cancer Research and some of the other cancer prevention guidelines, and a lot of those studies, it's been 8 to 10 servings a day of fruits and vegetables in a lot of these studies. And even if you look, you know, you think about a serving is about a half cup of most things, or, you know, medium-sized apple or half of a big banana, that kind of thing, that you say, like you say, five is not very many servings. And so I encourage my clients to, throughout the day, try to get their fruits in and maybe at least one vegetable. And what's mostly practical for most people is to say, well, I'll go heavier on vegetables at night because they might have a salad, then have a mm-hmm. side of a cup of broccoli, which is two servings. So that in a big salad might be four your servings. And maybe you're getting baby carrots or something you can take with you to work during the day. And then your fruits are more easily yeah. consumed during the day.
Because 2 1/4 cups of fruit and vegetables is not a lot.
No.
So we can boost that for sure.
Exactly.
Let's talk with a listener. Caller in Terre Haute, Indiana, line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm an endurance athlete, and I wonder if there's any post-exercise a supplement or meal or food that I should take to kind of replenish or help the muscles recover?
Yeah, there certainly are some things you can do. We know that when you train longer and harder, particularly as you would as an endurance athlete, the longer you go and the more calories you burn and the harder you're exercising, it's going to be more and more critical that you put in what we call a recovery fuel or a recovery snack or might be a recovery drink. There are studies to indicate that maybe having it in liquid form gets back to your muscles a little bit faster, in which case there are lots of products out there. There are a lot of different recovery shake type products. There are products, even things like a Carnation Instant breakfast drink that's portable that you could take with you. And a lot of people will make a whey protein shake as well. A lot of my athletes will even mix whey protein with milk or with chocolate milk and to get a little bit more protein but also have your carbohydrate needs taken care of. My recommendation as a general rule of thumb is to try to get in at least 50 grams of carbohydrate and about 20 grams of protein within 30 or 45 minutes after your workout. And so that could be done with a lot of different options. There was a new study that just came out. Again, there have been a few on chocolate milk from Indiana University, and another one was just released not that long ago, saying that chocolate milk is really the ideal breakdown of carbohydrate and protein because, of course, there's more carbohydrate and more sugar in chocolate milk than white milk. And that's one option. But certainly there are a lot of different things you could do, even if you're on the go and you have an energy bar, but you have a sport drink with it or even a juice box, which might give you 20 or 30 grams of carbohydrate, and then you have an energy bar with at least 15 or 20 grams in that, you're in good shape. It's somewhat solid, but it's also somewhat liquid and it's portable. So what we find from studies is that part of it is the timing. When you need those calories in, you really do want to get them within 30 or 45 minutes because you have more blood flow to the muscles. You're hormonally, your body's more adept at storing the carbohydrate and perhaps recovering the muscle tissue. So that's where carbohydrate helps you get energy back in the muscle. Protein helps you repair the muscle. And so you want both of those things. One caution I'll say is that sometimes I'll work with athletes who just have protein after a workout. And we know that that may help the muscle tissue, but it really does nothing to train your muscle to store more carbohydrate and more energy for your next workout. And so you do want to make sure you have both covered. The other thing that we know is that if you're a larger body size, now my athletes who are 300 pounds may drink 2 400-calorie recovery shakes right after they train. So that's 800 calories, maybe 50 grams of protein, and they need more because of their body size. But the lower body size you are, some of my athletes do fine on 200 or 300 calories within, but the timing is critical.
And you don't recommend anyone over another?
Well, I think it's got to be something that, depending upon where you are, is it portable? Is it something you'll be able to have with you? Do you like the taste of it? Is it something you'll consume consistently? Because that's real helpful, too. So what I would look at, because there are so many different products out there, I would try 3 or 4 different ones that are specific recovery drinks to see if you like one of those over the other. And then there are, again, either a lot of different things out there. I mentioned the Carnation Instant Breakfast. Even a lot of athletes will drink Slim Fast, or they'll drink Spiritine Shake, or, something that's already packaged up and easy to take with you. And those things can be a help, too, if you like the taste of them. And certainly there are a lot of things you could just make yourself. If you're going for a long run and you're coming back home, then even something like a peanut butter sandwich and juice is not that exciting, but it basically can have the nutrients that you need in terms of the protein and also the carbohydrate in there too. So,
okay, well, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi, I had a question about omega-3 acids, and the question is this: there appear to be different kinds. There's in the fish oils, there's like EPA and DHA, and then flaxseed there is ALA. Anyway, no one really makes a recommendation as to what is for what, and I wondered if you could break those down and talk about milligrams you should receive of each, or if they are effectively interchangeable, although it doesn't look like that from what I've been able to see.
Well, you bring up a good point. I mean, there's a lot more interest in fish oils and certainly the different types of fish oils or the different types of fatty acids and omega-3s. As you mentioned, if you look at a non-fish source, something like flaxseed, then the percentages are a little bit different. In some studies and some researchers who work on this area, they may suggest you may hear more, it should be fish oil because of the combinations of this EPA and DHA, which are different fatty acids and different types of omega-3s. But ALA is also an important omega-3, which is found, like I said, mostly in flax. So one thing we do know, in a lot of studies, if you look overall at omega-3 fatty acids, it's going to depend on your concern and why you may want to be taking it. And, of course, because fish oils or omega-3s can be blood thinners, this is one supplement that if you add to what you're doing, I always recommend people clear that with their doc or make sure that's added to the list of medications or something just in case there's a problem there. But generally, we look at 1 to 3 grams a day in a lot of these studies of total omega-3s. And the other thing that's kind of a general recommendation is that it's mixed tocopherols. And what that means basically is that you have a mix of fatty acids. In other words, you may have EPA and DHA, which primarily are what you're going to find in the fish oil supplements, but it's not just one. And so with all the supplements that you see out there, because we're still finding out a lot of things about these omega-3s, generally we would look for a mixed tocopherol, or it may be often a 2-to-1 ratio of EPA to DHA, which is pretty common of what we'll find.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Urbana on line 2. Hi.
Hello, line 2?
Yeah, that's you. Go ahead.
I have two unrelated questions. One is that a frequent prescription for people with low bone density is weight-bearing exercise, and I'd like to know what you recommend in the way of weight-bearing exercise. And the other question is that I've heard you frequently recommend trail mix to people doing exercise for extended periods, and I'm wondering if there are products or recipes that you recommend for that.
Okay, good questions.
Yes. Well, generally when we think of weight-bearing exercise, it's any exercise that you're up and moving your body, so you're actually having to lift your own weight. So, for example, if you're walking, that's considered weight-bearing exercise, while if you're on the bicycle, that's really not considered weight-bearing exercise because you're not really pounding at all. You're sitting and you're moving your body, and so not saying cycling isn't important and can be a helpful addition, but it's not necessarily weight-bearing. We know that weight training or doing some type of strength training is considered weight-bearing exercise. It puts some stress on your muscle and some stress on your bone. And so that is one thing that exercise physiologists will often recommend, you know, as a way to increase bone density is doing some strength training and weight training. We know that that's been helpful from a lot of different studies. But the main thing you want to think about is, are you actually lifting your muscles? Are you lifting your body to move them, which we know stresses the bone and helps in terms of strengthening the bone? So another example is swimming, which is a great exercise. It's not necessarily weight-bearing because the water is lifting your body. And so you want to look for something where you're actually moving like that. Basketball, racquetball, anything like that would be weight-bearing, of course, too, or tennis, because you're lifting your body and moving it.
Now, you mentioned weight training and strength training. Where does one find out how to do those things if one doesn't have any experience with
it? Yeah, I really recommend. I think depending upon where you are, there generally are a lot of really good places now that have setups where if you called fitness centers as part of their introductory program, they will actually take you through the strength training equipment. I think it's so important to go through with somebody who knows how to run it all and how your body should fit in those positions. I think that's extremely helpful. So I always feel like that's worth the money if there's a fee for going through that with someone. Or there are a lot of personal trainers now who come into your home or maybe will meet you at the gym you're at and make sure that they set up a good program for you. So I think whether you exercise somewhere or whether you want to exercise at home with hand weights, there certainly are a lot of people who do that kind of thing in the community. And I have, you know, depending upon where you are, I have a lot of people I work with directly that I'd be happy to give you their information as well at a later time. But I do think one-on-one, going through with an exercise physiologist, personal trainer, someone who's certified to provide a personalized exercise program for you is really, really helpful. Because there's also a lot of things you can do strength-wise that don't require weights that you can do on your own, that if you just do that 10 or 15 minutes a day, it's a huge benefit to your body. So I think that's a help. There are organizations like American College of Sports Medicine, where a lot of exercise specialists are certified through them or certified through ACE, American Council on Exercise. And those are things we want to make sure of, that you work with somebody who's certified and has done the training to really know the physiology. And, of course, other folks like physical therapists will do the same type of thing with people if they've got a physical problem as well.
And before we get to the trail mix question, is there a resource that you can find, you could find at the library? Are there books on how to begin strength training, weight training?
Yeah, there are a lot of resources. One that's really good, I think, is just Prevention Magazine, actually, because Prevention has, they might be more specific to certain things, but they have exercise specialists who always have certain exercise positioning, pictures, all that every month in Prevention. And there are a lot of good books out, even from one of our local publishers, Human Kinetics, which has tons of books on exercise, exercise prescription, how to start a workout program, all those kinds of things, located in Champaign. But there are a lot of books at the library or books at your local bookstore, which would be kind of beginning exercise. I think those can be helpful, but I think it's also so important to actually physically go to someone and feel how that feels to you when you're starting a program and how you would do things correctly, because we're finding so much of it is proper positioning, and particularly to prevent getting injured when you work with someone who's really trained. I think it's really invaluable to do that as well.
Okay, now on to trail mix.
Okay. Trail mix. There are a lot of ways you could put trail mix together. I'll give you a basic recipe right now of something that is kind of a standard thing that I use.
Okay.
And that would be something pretty simple. Like if you take 2 cups of Cheerios or Chex, let's say, or oat squares or some type of just, kind of lower calorie but whole grain cereal. If you take 2 cups of that type of cereal, and if you take 1 cup of nuts, that might be peanuts or almonds or walnuts or combination sunflower seeds, soy nuts. So you take 1 cup of nuts and 1 cup of dried fruit, and that could be any dried fruit you like too. I mean, couple of the dried fruits that we don't think of having as often are apricots, which are real high in beta carotene, and also dried pineapple. You can find dried pineapple a lot easier than you used to be able to. And of course, you can get dried cranberries and blueberries now, and raisins and things like that. So if you have 2 cups of the cereal, 1 cup of nuts, 1 cup of dried fruit, and then often I'll put in 1 cup of some type of grain. That might be pretzels, if you like pretzels, or it might even be something like the real small rice cakes or another cereal. And that's kind of a good mix. You can always add other things like extra sunflower seeds, which work really well, or even some of the pre-made granola. You can buy granola in bins a lot of places, or you can buy low-fat granola cereal that's packaged. And that works really well, too. And so kind of mixing this up, but this is sort of a main thing. I usually put a cereal in, or 1 or 2 grains, nuts, and dried fruit. And that's a good mix. The thing to remember with trail mix is that, like you say, if you're exercising a long time, or if you're hiking, or if you're out, these are great because they're concentrated calories. On the other hand, if you're not exercising that long, they're concentrated calories. So so they can add up either way. So
both ways.
Yeah, if you have 1 cup of trail mix, that could be 400 calories even or so. So, I mean, it could add up quite fast. But what I like to do is take this and then put it in those little tiny Ziploc bags or small containers, because those are maybe 1/4 cup or so, which is a good, maybe 1/2 cup, that's a good serving. And so, often you can put these things together yourself. They're a lot less expensive than even buying granola bars. They have a lot less sugar and more protein, generally more fiber. So that's a good way to do it. And you can always add in just regular oatmeal too. Some people don't mind eating oatmeal when it's not cooked. And so just plain oatmeal is great in terms of a grain, so that would be another thing that you could add in there as well.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and it's the first Monday of the month, so registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us of Nutrition on the Move. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. You can join us with a question, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's go now and talk to someone who's waiting on the toll-free line in Ottawa, Illinois. Line 4, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Susan, my question is, for instance, if there was a natural emergency or this pandemic, if I'm going to go to the store and stock up for my family of four, what are the essentials I should have in my pantry to last, say, a month? The minimum, what are the 4 things, 5 things I should buy to last for about a month?
Well, I think the thing you definitely want to have first is plenty of water. So okay. Make sure, I mean, we often will buy water, but maybe not that much bottled water. So that, of course, we've seen is a huge concern for people if they can't get to food. So that's probably going to be a lot more than you think you need in terms of water. So, I mean, we know our basic guideline. We probably do need, most of us 60 to 80 ounces a day or so of water. Now, of course, we can get by on less than that, but that may be a good rule of thumb in terms of for each person, depending upon age and all. But that's important. I would also think that if there's other things that you could get that have some fluid but also have some more nutrients, for instance, things like canned soups. You know, canned soups we usually heat, but you don't have to. And so things like canned soups that maybe have more beans in them and more barley, let's say beef and barley soup, something like that that is, you know, going to give you some good nutrients and at the same time is quite easy to just open up. Things like beans, for instance, canned beans, if you like them, have a lot of nutrients, have a lot of calories. And they would, you know, that would be something that you might want to really add that in terms of getting extra things like that. I think the other thing you can look at are things like jerky, you know, anything that would be dried, beef jerky. There's soy jerky out now. Things like packaged cereals, especially things like we just talked about, trail mix. You know, you wouldn't want to necessarily make it and keep it because it wouldn't stay that long. But if you buy packaged granola, those kinds of things that are just real concentrated. The main thing we want to look at for foods that we keep, you know, nutrients are important, but I would look at calories, you know, things that are really high calorie, because you may not be able to eat that much, you know, depending upon what happens or, you know, what you need to be able to eat not that much food, but get a lot of calories with it. So anything like, again, you know, things like dried fruits and things won't last forever, but that's where you could look at more canned items and that kind of thing,
How about like peanut butter or something like that?
Yeah, peanut butter too. The other thing is things like dried milk. You know, dried skim milk. And so something like that you can mix with water would be a good option as well. I'm trying to think if there's anything.
Canned fish?
Canned fish certainly would be good. Or canned meats even, too. You know,
like
canned chicken.
Canned tuna along that line.
Mm-hmm. It may be on the USDA website. I'm not sure about this, but there may be an actual list. I don't know. There probably is. Or maybe even on the FEMA website of maybe things to have a preparation plan, and that might be something to look for, too. I don't know that I've seen that, but I'll bet that there is something like that available.
Well, it's stocking your pantry for a pandemic.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks
for the call. Or for a power outage, or, you know, for a boil order or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Let's go and talk with another listener. Caller in Aurora, line one. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I've had two questions, if I could ask. One, I was wondering what the protein requirement for an adult is, an adult male, daily.
Okay.
And the second was, as far as omega-3 oils are concerned, I don't have that much access to fish. I was wondering about olive oil and walnuts, whether they would be helping me in that regard.
Okay. Let me answer the protein question first. We do have a general recommendation for protein, and that is about 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. Or something that's a little bit easier is taking your weight and just dividing that in half. That's going to be pretty similar. So let's say if your weight in pounds is 150 pounds, about 75 grams of protein. It might be a little bit less than that when you look at the grams per kilogram. But if you take your weight, divide it by 2.2, that'll give your kilogram weight, and it'd be 0.8 times your kilogram weight. Or again, your weight in pounds divided in half, roughly. And so we do know there are times when you have increased protein needs. Certainly, because I work a lot with athletes, when people are training more, trying to get stronger, we definitely often will go to 1 gram per pound, which is a lot. Sometimes I've had athletes who go way over that. I had an athlete one time at 2 grams per pound, which was 500 grams of protein for him, and I sent him right to our team physician, and certainly he had some kidney damage already. So you can go overboard on protein because, you know, when you think protein has to be broken down to form urea, you know, to form urine, essentially, it's your kidneys doing all that. And so we think in very large volume, large amounts of protein, it can be problematic. And certainly when these high protein diets were very popular a few years back, one of the recommendations was always more water, because partly because your kidneys weren't have to work overtime to get rid of the breakdown products of protein. So we do know if you're exercising hard. Sometimes people, when they're recovering from surgery or they've been in the hospital for a while and really trying to get them back up, sometimes protein needs are higher. And it all does depend on age, too. But the adult requirement for males and females is this 0.8 gram per kilogram.
Great. Yeah.
And when you asked about the oils, too, there are oils. Probably the oil that's the best source of omega-3s, our one caller mentioned flaxseed. And flaxseed oil is extremely high source of omega-3s. And so of all the oils, if you were going to use an oil in salad dressing or things, flaxseed oil does work extremely well. But walnut oil is a good choice. Soybean oil has some. Soybeans themselves have some omega-3s as well. And nuts and seeds in general are just other good sources of monounsaturated fats and good source of fatty acids. Olive oil, too, eating olives. Having these types of foods and oils is really helpful. We do know, and we're finding more and more out all the time about how we don't want to cut our fat too low. You know, we really, even if you've got high cholesterol, I have so many clients who come in and been on plans for high cholesterol and they've cut their fat down so low, and sometimes their carbohydrates end up being too high, and that can affect triglyceride levels and some other things. And so we really want your fat to be, you know, between 20% and 30% or so anyway. And so the whole goal is to increase good fats, more oils, nuts, seeds, things like this. And so those are good places to look to get them as well.
Okay. Have we done it for you? Okay. Our thanks to that listener in Aurora for calling us this afternoon. And before I get to the next caller, I want to just go over this math. You take your weight and you divide it by 2.2,
mm-hmm.
and then you multiply that by 0.8,
exactly.
which is your gram of per 0.8 gram per kilogram. And then you get what your requirement is.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Very good. Let's talk now with that listener in Urbana on line 2 who's been waiting for us. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I am breastfeeding my 4-week-old baby, and we just went to the pediatrician today and were told that breast milk has everything that the baby needs except for vitamin D. And so I was wondering, I know I should know this, I know that vitamin D was something that's important to try to keep jaundice off in the early days, but what does vitamin D do for babies and children and adults?
Vitamin D does a lot of things in the body, but the thing we most often think about it for is to help keep bones strong or help your bones develop, and that's why it's so important for babies as well, is that vitamin D, if you think about calcium and vitamin D, they're really partners in bone strength. And so, for instance, we have studies where people have plenty of calcium in their diet, but their vitamin D is low, so they don't absorb that calcium. And so you need vitamin D in the diet or in a supplemental form or from sunlight or maybe all three together to help you utilize calcium along with some other nutrients in the body and build and maintain strong bone. And so vitamin D is also important for other things, hormonally and things like that. But that's the main thing with vitamin D, is that it does kind of play a role as a helper with calcium, and it's an essential role for bone strength. And that's important as we get older, too. There have been a lot of research come out in the last few years looking at people who have, again, taken plenty of calcium or get that in the diet, and particularly as they age, maybe don't get outside as much in these northern climates where we live, that vitamin D levels are so low that that's a problem. So we see there's been a lot more interest in vitamin D and its role.
Good sources outside of milk.
Mm-hmm. Well, things like sardines, fish sources, vitamin D fortified. Most of the time what we find is vitamin D fortified food. So it might be milk, yogurt, cheese, things like that are fortified in vitamin D.
And for babies?
Yeah, and for babies, then again, like you say, breast milk, but part of that is in how you eat. And if you're getting plenty of calcium and vitamin D and things, and that's going to be important too. And sometimes, you know, it depends on the baby, but sometimes your pediatrician may recommend a supplement. I remember when my daughter was little, I also gave her a little bit of a liquid supplement as well as the breast milk when she was just nursing. And so that might be something to ask, you know, it kind of depends. And often they may check blood work and check that out too. But certainly a lot of supplements you'll find have vitamin D in them as well.
Okay, very good. Hope that helps. Next we go to another listener in Urbana. This one on line 1. Hi.
Hi. I don't know if you've covered this before. I'm trying to have our family eat much better, higher quality food. I also take a multivitamin, multi-mineral, antioxidant supplement. And it seems like so much of the food that you buy is also enriched. Like today I bought the fresh squeezed orange juice, but it has calcium and vitamin D in it. And there's a lot of food like this. So is there any, how would you know if you're getting too much of something?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a common concern, because are you overdoing it with all your supplementation along with everything else? Here's a good base and a good thing to think of. If you take a multivitamin, which I recommend doing, a good base is one that covers 100% of key nutrients. It may not have everything. It's certainly not going to have 100% of calcium generally in a multi and some other things. But basically 100% multivitamin with iron if you're female and before menopause. Doesn't necessarily need to have iron if you're an adult male. So you have that as your base. Now, things like calcium or the vitamin D, which another good source would be the calcium fortified orange juice. Calcium is one of those things that it is possible to get too much of. If you supplement, for example, you don't really want to go over 2,500 milligrams a day. That's hard to get in food. You could get it if you drank 12 glasses of milk a day, but it's really hard to get just in food. You could get it if you take 1,500 milligrams of calcium a day, plus you're getting 6 servings of milk or so a day. You could go overboard in calcium, but you can see where most people wouldn't. It would be a little bit hard to do. Other nutrients like vitamin C and B vitamins, things like that, you probably can't get too much in food. Even things like vitamin A, which we have some concern of in supplements getting too much, the vitamin A that you get in food is generally beta-carotene based, which is easier to absorb, better for your body. So that's not generally a problem unless you're eating 5 bags of carrots a day or something. So most foods you're okay with. You're probably not going to have a problem with getting too much of anything. The problem occurs, I find, is when people are taking 7, 8, 10 different vitamins or minerals, and then when I go to assess all those, we find that they just don't need all those. They might be getting too much. One example is certain B vitamins, which people think, well, they're not a problem because you just get rid of them in your urine, the excess. They're water-soluble. However, in large amounts, B vitamins can actually cause problems like nerve damage, which some people take to prevent nerve damage.
Wow.
So there are, we do have general recommendations for amounts, what we call now the upper level, which is our national recommendations not to go over. And so that's something that you can find online a lot of different places and or in nutrition books. And that's something kind of as a guide. Maybe if you're taking several different things, you want to be careful. But in food, we usually don't, it's usually not a problem. And so if you're just trying to get your family to have, a lot more fruits and vegetables, calcium fortified orange juice, if they, that's not really a problem. It can be a big help unless, again, you've got a kid who's eating, drinking 8 glasses a day, and they may not need calcium fortified orange juice.
Okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm,
bye. Bye-bye. We started the hour talking about keeping a journal of, what you eat and minutes of activity and what kind of activity and that kind of thing. How long does it take, to do kind of that kind of exercise on your pantry? Do you know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that you kind of look at what you're eating and what the family's eating, and you go, okay, well, if we're eating this type of bread,
mm-hmm.
we're drinking this type of juice, we're eating these fruits and vegetables, these are the things that are the go-tos, if you know what I mean, the things that we turn to over and over and over again. How long does that, it can be a little involved, but on the other hand, I guess once you kind of have a sense of it,
mm-hmm.
then that's that, and that's that, and that's what we're getting.
Right. I don't think it has to take that long if you're really aware of looking at, again, the first step is to look at what you are eating, the types of things you have, because then that gives you an idea of where your areas to improve are. One simple thing, we talk a lot now about whole grains. And so a simple thing for a lot of people is to say, we know with breads, if we look and it's 100% whole wheat or 100% whole rye, that's an easy thing to switch over to. Or even now, some of the breads that are whole grain that are still kind of kid-oriented breads. We can do that. Then you want to look at your other grains. Do you have a lot of white rice, white pasta, things like
mm-hmm.
that? There's nothing wrong with those foods, but if you're willing to try brown rice, if you would look at things like maybe beans as opposed to pasta all the time, those kinds of things, then we automatically have more whole grains. Even things as simple as eating more corn and peas. A lot of my clients love corn and peas. They hardly ever eat them, but they would eat that as a side as opposed to pasta. Well, there's your starch, plus you've got fiber. And so just kind of looking, okay, what could I substitute in there a little more often that maybe everybody would like or would at least try? And the same things with fruits and vegetables. Often we just get in a rut of eating the same things. And so the first step there is to add color. Could I buy two or three more things that add a little more red and blue and purple and orange to my cart? And if you do that, boy, that's a step in the right direction, because then you're just broadening the nutrients that you're getting. And doing things like that would not take long at all, because you could go through the food group and say, well, could I do one thing here, one thing here, one thing here? It's kind of like the switch to skim milk, or a lot of my clients who say they like milk but really hardly drink it, but they would eat more yogurt, or they would eat a cheese stick, or there are things they could add, where then we make a list and say, okay, these are three or four things to get in the milk group, or soy milk or whatever you might like, or three or four things that would be lean proteins that you might not think about it. Another good way to assess, and what a dietitian will often do with people, is help you figure out, what is your cooking routine? How are you, what's your purchasing routine? What kind of things do you have around? I kind of have a list of, you know, must-haves in the kitchen for my collegiate athletes and things, and thinking, okay, probably a Foreman grill or something like that, a crock pot, you know, some of these basics that then you get five or six easy recipes, and that's pretty simple. You know, you do that and you can find quick ways to prepare food. So those things help as well. And I think, you know, part of the message with Nutrition Month this month is really, you know, we know nutrition makes a huge impact. We know it's helpful. Sometimes we just get busy or don't pay that much attention to it. And so I tell clients, the sooner you kind of figure out what you need and assess it and evaluate how you're doing and make some changes, the better. Because everything you do now is going to help you for the rest of your life. There's no question about that. And so that's the, you know, really why it is important sometimes to take a second. If you feel confused about things, really, you know, look to an expert. There are a lot of different places you can find registered dietitians to help with that.
Let's see if we can get one more call in this afternoon before we're out of time. Listener in Champaign, line two. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
The relationship between omega-3 and other antioxidants, like vitamin E, is vitamin E in the omega-3 fish oils and so forth?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, vitamin E is generally found in fats, and in some fats there'll be more vitamin E than others. There'll be some. If the main thing you're looking at is omega-3, that's primarily what you're going to find. Now, that being said, we know vitamin E is one of those nutrients that it's pretty difficult to get enough of. And so sometimes you'll see in a supplemental form, you'll see an omega-3 supplement that also has vitamin E in it. And a lot of people look for that because, again, sometimes we're just not eating enough fat or foods high enough in vitamin E to be the kind of benefit that we're really looking for with that.
So I have a vitamin E supplement that says 400 IU, and that says that it's 1,333%. Now, is that, if you do that every day, that, you know, get supposedly 1,300% of what you're supposed to have daily, is it better than to maybe take this tablet every third day or every fourth day?
Right.
Why is that percentage so high? Or why do people think they need that high if the recommended amount is so much lower?
Well, that gets into, you know, what's therapeutic and what's kind of helping you stay healthy. There are studies that say 400 IUs of vitamin E in many studies have been beneficial. But then more of the recent studies on vitamin E haven't found as much benefit with additional supplementation like that. And so even the researchers in vitamin E, different researchers, you'll read their information and it'll be varied. Some may recommend supplementation, some may not. Kind of the general trend now is to be more careful with vitamin E because some of the more recent studies have found that higher amounts like that of vitamin E, 400 IUs, 800 IUs, might actually increase your risk of certain disease and maybe not be helpful cardiovascularly. So I think, again, you want to look at what you're getting diet-wise. If you are supplementing, I think it is important to, you know, work with someone who can help you figure out, hey, for you, is that maybe a good move, or can you get it in food, and what might be the risk?
And if it's, is it beneficial if you want to take those larger amounts to take them maybe every third day or something like that, or does your body need it a resupply every day, or does vitamin E stay in your body for a longer period of time?
Yeah, vitamin E stays in your body because it's fat soluble. And so that is one thing sometimes people will do. They will take an amount, but they won't take it every day.
Okay.
And so that could be another another option as well. One thing I might mention, and this kind of goes along with the question we had about fish oils in general before, there's a really helpful website called consumerlab.com. It's just all together, www.consumerlab.com. They do periodic reviews of different supplements. They just came out with their new review of calcium, and they actually check these supplements to say what's in them. Is there any potential problem? Why might it be used? What would be recommended amounts? And that's a really nice resource for consumers, I think, just consumerlab.com. So I always get my updates on supplements on there too. And that will also tell you if there's a problem with mercury or lead or contamination with certain supplements. So that can be a big help.
Well, thank you. You've been most helpful.
You're very welcome. Susan, thank you.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Great time this afternoon. Time has flown by.
It has.
We'll see you in April, I guess, huh?
Very good.
How about that?
Okay.
All right. Susan Kundrat has been our guest this afternoon. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise here on the Afternoon Magazine. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the author of Nutrition on the Move. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher Coach's Choice. You'll find her on the web at www.eatandmove.com. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Let's find out what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks very much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade today, kind of a rough trade day in the corn pit in particular, where futures were anywhere between 4 and 7 cents lower for the day. We'll talk this afternoon with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, to see why that was the case. During the closing market report at about 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon, and he'll be joining us tomorrow as well over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Kicks off at 7:30 a.m. Central Time for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. That's absolutely free to everyone who wants to come. You can join us for the meal at the noon hour if you'd like. If you choose to do that, there is an $8.50 cost, but that's all paid out to the Beef House. Otherwise, no registration. Just show up in the morning. We'll kick off that meeting right at 8 o'clock Central, 9 in the Eastern Time Zone. There are coffee and rolls in the morning prior to that, so pre-registration around 7:30 or so. We hope to see you there tomorrow. Now, let's take a look at how the numbers settled up at the Chicago Board of Trade and in Kansas City. We'll start there. March wheat futures at 435 3/4 settlement. They were down 7 1/4 today, had a high of 437, a low at 431. Their settlement price at 435 3/4 off 7 1/4 in the March wheat pit from Kansas City. May futures at 39.5 were down 6. They finished at $4.39 once again in the May wheat in Kansas City. They were off 6 cents for the day. March wheat in Chicago now, 370 the high, the low at 364.5, a settlement price at 370, and they finished down 3.5 cents on the day. The May futures, a 382.5 high, low at 374, settlement price at 380, down 5 cents. July futures, 393.5 on the high, the low at 85, settlement price at 91.5, down 4.5, and the September's 403.25 the high, the low at 394, settlement price at 402.25 off 4 cents. December futures down 4.25 at $4.14.5 a bushel, with a high of 15.5 and a low at 8.5. And the March 07 contract in the soft red winter wheat pits settled at 422.5. They were off 3.5 cents. The high at 23.5, the low at 16.5. From the corn pit today, grains under pressure throughout the day. Wheat contracts were off, although they bounced off their lows, and the corn still fell through that 6 to 7 cent. There was some support there that was broken, and that was probably a technical switch to the downside. But we really do have to check with Kurt Kimmel to see what else might have been happening off the squawk boxes today in the corn pit. March future, the contract at 226 high, low at 221 3/4. Settlement price at $2.23. They were off 5 3/4 today. The May futures were at 235 3/4 on their high. Low at 31 3/4. Settlement price at 32 3/4, down 6 3/4 in July. 45.5 on the high, the low at $2.41 3/4. Settlement price at 243. They were off 6 1/4. September's were down 7 cents. 252.5 the high, the low at 48 3/4. Settlement price at 249 1/4. That SEP contract down 7 cents. December, this new year, new crop harvest month, $2.62 the high, the low at 58 1/4. Settlement price at $2.59 1/2 for the DEES contract in the corn pit. and it finished 6 cents lower for the day. May futures next year, 270 and a quarter. They were off four, and the near closer by March contract of 2007 at 265 and three quarters, off 5.5 for the day. March oats at 184 were up one. The May futures down two at 187.5. Soy complex now, March beans, 592.5 the high, the low at 79.5, a settlement price at $5.87. They were down 6.25. May futures 606 the high. The low at 591.5, a settlement price at $6.5, off 5.5 in July futures. 617 the high, the low at 603, settled at 611.5, off 5.75. August contract at 619.5 high, low at 606.5, settlement price at 616, down 5.75. September futures $6.18 the high, the low at 609.5, settled at 616.5, down 5.75. And November beans were down 5, 628 the high, the low at 14.5. Settlement price at 622.5. Once again, those no beans were down a nickel. January futures, 632 the high, the low at 21. Settlement price at $6.29, and they were off 3.5 cents for the day. March bean meal at 175.30 the high, the low at 171.80. Settlement price 173.90, down 120 on the day. The May down 150 at 175.90. And the March bean oil, 24.45 the high, the low at 13. Settled at 24.45, off 11. And the May futures were down 12 at 24.70. Nine today. That's a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade, the numbers from the Merck. In just a moment, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. Let's take a look now at what happened today on the Merck. Prices were lower for livestock contracts. March feeder cattle, the high 106.60, the low 105.80, the settlement 105.95, that down 37.5. April 107.60, the high 106.72.5, the low 106.95, the settlement that down 10. May 108.20, the high 107.40, the low, the settlement 107.87.5, that down a nickel. April live cattle, 86.25, today's high, the low, 85.55, the settlement 85.70, that down 32.5. June live cattle, 81.95, the high, 81.15, the low, 81.27.5, today's settlement, that down 42.5. April lean hog, 62.35, the high, 60.70, the low, finishing at 60.77.5, down 122.5. May lean hog, 68.90, the high, 67.77.5, the low, the settlement, 68.05, that down 72.5. June, 70.75, the high, 69.40, the low, 69.52.5, the settlement, that off 97.5. And July, lean hogs, today's high, 69.37.5, the low, 68.30, the settlement, 68.62.5, that down 60. March bellies, 88.60, the high, 87.75, the low, 88.20, the settlement.